Bubble Wrap Children, Chapter 0, written and read by Helen Oakwater. If you think adopted children are safe from an approach by the birth family they were removed from, think again. Social networking has blown that protection sky high. Facebook allows you to search for anyone and email anyone. Anyone you know, anyone you want to know, anyone you once knew, or complete strangers. Present, past, and future connections can be made via the web. Relationships can be formed or rekindled. Identities can be faked, lies told, history rewritten. Adopted children are being connected to their birth families via Facebook. Some children have actively searched for birth family members. Others simply received an email in their Facebook box, which exploded in their face. Hello, I'm your father. I've been searching for you ever since you were stolen by social services. You look beautiful. I love you so much. Darling son, I am so happy 'cause I found you. I've been looking for ages. Please write back, 'cause you've been told lies about me. I've always loved you, never stopped thinking about you. Be great to see you. Messages like these, some in normal English, some in text speak, are re-traumatising adopted children. Adoptive families are being blown apart. Several adopted children have left their adoptive families and moved in with their birth parents, sometimes within days of reconnecting. Other teenage adoptees have been completely thrown by the unwanted contact. Their schooling, relationships and mental health have suffered. Some did not sit exams, others dropped out of college or university because they were so destabilised. The two emails might have sounded innocuous. However, the birth father in the first is a known paedophile. The second is a mother who had six children removed by social services due to her alcohol abuse, chaotic lifestyle, and her lack of empathy. She simply could not see the pain she inflicted on a succession of children and the damage done to them. Her circumstances and attitude have hardly changed since the children were removed, and she still grieves them. In one case, the birth parent reconnected easily because the child was a Facebook friend to a member of an old foster family. In the other example, the birth parent simply typed in the child's first name and date of birth, then trawled through the photographs displayed on Facebook. Children can legally register on Facebook at 13. Teenagers now access the internet via their mobile phones, not just computers, so it's impossible for parents to monitor or control. You can have several Facebook accounts. Curiosity will motivate searching. It always has, and it always will. So far, many of the reconnections via Facebook have caused much confusion, pain, and sorrow because they have been built on lies, delusions, and false hopes. The participants, whether willing or shocked, have been unprepared and unsupported. Preparation and support are the keys to successful post-adoption contact, whatever form it takes. Instant connection. Until a few years ago, post-adoption reunions were initiated by an adult, sometimes using an intermediary service which offered counselling and approached all involved with sensitivity and respect. Now, technology allows reconnection within hours of searching. There is no time to reflect, no mediation, no safeguards or supervision. Whoever makes the first move, the other person's circumstances and situation are completely unknown. Is this a good time? Do they have mental health issues, exams, drugs problem? Have they just split from a long relationship? What support do they have? How will those around them feel about this contact? How fragile and vulnerable are each of the parties involved? How will the adoptive parents feel and react? Will they even know? What will happen afterwards? Reasons for adoption. Now and then. Celebrity adoptees share joyful reunion stories and promote adoption. Recently, there's been a spate of TV programmes and articles where adult adoptees in their 40s, 50s and 60s have been reunited with their birth mothers, fathers or siblings. There is a public and media appetite for these feel-good adoption stories, where often an underlying message is that blood is thicker than water. The honeymoon period is public, but the long-term outcomes undisclosed. This reinforces the public notion that adoption equals unrelinquished babies, whereas for the last few decades, adoption occurs because the state intervenes and removed a maltreated child from his toxic parents. Subsequently, a judge, after examining copious evidence, agrees with the social service recommendation that the birth parents do not have the capacity or the future capacity to learn how to parent this child adequately. These parents did not give up their child. He was forcibly removed because their parenting style was abusive, neglectful, or deeply inadequate. Chapter 4 details some measurable skills, characteristic, and traits, including empathy, emotional intelligence, and executive functioning thinking skills, whose absence inhibit their parenting capacity. These models also serve as useful analytical tools for professionals. Maltreatment, wiring, trauma, and bubble wrap. What is the consequence of infant maltreatment? What imprints do abuse, neglect, and chaos leave on a child? Great technological leaps this century offer evidence which support older anecdotal findings. Thanks to the advent of brain imaging, we know that neurons which fire together wire together. So a child raised in a calm, secure, yet stimulating setting will have a brain wired differently to that of a child deprived of maternal care, living in a chaotic, scary environment. The infant's brain forms thousands of new neural connections every second. More are formed in the first year of life than at any subsequent time. We also know the brain is plastic, and in the right circumstances, parts can be rewired. Another scientific and technological leap within this century is our awareness of brain functioning, which offers hope for healing trauma. Awareness of post-traumatic stress disorder has grown, mainly due to affected soldiers returning from war zones, receiving sympathetic media and movie coverage. The symptoms listed include flashbacks, sleep difficulties, anger outbursts, and a general dysfunctionality. The impact of trauma on the adult brain is recognised. However, the impact of trauma on children's developing brains is not widely acknowledged, tricky to classify, yet profound. In superb research, including brain scanning, undertaken by Dr. Bruce Perry at the Child Trauma Academy, unarguably proves that maltreatment inhibits normal infant brain development. In Chapter 8, the proposed DSM classification of developmental trauma disorder is explained, and by integrating this with Chapter 2, How Children's Needs Change with Time, readers can get a deeper understanding of the impact of early trauma on children and its disturbing legacy. Many adopted children suffered terribly before placement. Their world was terrifying, chaotic, unpredictable, an unsafe place where adults could not be trusted or failed to shield you from harm. These children protected themselves by hiding their true feelings, shutting down emotionally, being compliant or aggressive, or both. Their observable behaviour often seems to make no sense. Metaphorically, they wrap themselves in bubble wrap for safety, a fantastic protection strategy, but it warps their view of the world and it distorts our view of them. Gently removing the bubble wrap, layer by layer, is the complex task adoptive parents face for many years, including during adolescence. Adolescence. Teenagers rebel. It's part of their job description. They experiment with their identity, habits, clothing and relationships. Secrecy is normal. They often reject many of their parents' values, create conflict and confrontation. Some behaviour is due to the changing brain chemistry and hormone fluctuations. Adolescence is both a physical and psychological passage. Potential to rewire. During adolescence, the brain has a burst of activity and fresh growth. So the potential to rewire and prune existing circuits is huge. It is a fantastic healing opportunity for adopted children, particularly those who received appropriate therapy and support in mid-childhood. Unexpected contact via Facebook can and does severely sabotage this healing opportunity because the child becomes re-traumatised. All the family are looking forward to seeing you at Cousin Veronica's wedding next week. We will meet you off the train and have a great party. That message was posted publicly on the Facebook page of Anne, an adopted teenager. All her virtual and real friends read the comment, leading to difficult questions at school, forcing the disclosure that she had another family, and her squirming at the insensitive yet common question, "Why did they give you up?" Fortunately, she tearfully confessed to her adoptive parents about the wedding reunion plan, which involved a 250-mile train journey for a party with the entire birth family, including those who had abused her. Her adoptive parents are picking up the pieces from that incident and now understand that the regular interactions with her birth parents and siblings caused Anne to be particularly uptight and aggressive. For several months, Anne's healing was suspended because her birth family were in her face and re-traumatising her. Birth families offer an escape route for a vulnerable, rebellious teenage adoptee who is frequently in conflict with his boundary-holding adoptive parents. They encourage cooperative, considerate behaviour, schooling and responsible living. Birth families offer something different, which is far more alluring and also feels strangely familiar. Processing the past. The body keeps the score. Trauma is stored within the body. Sensory memories are held at a cellular level. As trauma expert Bessel van der Kolk, director of the trauma in Boston, says, in a nutshell, the body keeps the score. Maltreated children have sensory triggers that reconnect them to unconscious memories from their brutal past. That's why, for many adopted children, linking to their birth family stirs up old, oddly recognisable sensations, plus a high-voltage cocktail of positive and negative emotions. By learning what happened to them in their early life, children can begin to make sense of their inner world. Robust life story work, which deals with the gruesome facts, not just the nice stuff, is crucial and will protect them during adolescence and in later life. Appropriate therapy to process the trauma associated with maltreatment is essential. Ongoing, facilitated, direct contact may be the vaccine which protects them from future contamination via social networking. Looking beyond now and towards the 2020s, we know adopted children will be able to reconnect to their birth family well before adulthood. These children will benefit hugely if they are more resilient and knowledgeable about themselves. The adoption world must change some existing practices and introduce therapeutic work in mid-childhood or earlier. Waiting until inevitable problems explode in adolescence is daft and not cost-effective. Brain plasticity makes early intervention strategies a no-brainer for both child protection and therapeutic interventions. Contact. Contact in adoption has always been a complex issue. The reasons underlying searching and reconnection need addressing. Facebook is just the search engine. The root causes include grief, loss, identity issues, teenage rebellion, curiosity, and to make sense of themselves. Big, emotionally charged stuff. When is contact good? What circumstances make it bad? How can it be most effective? Should it be face-to-face or via a third-party letterbox? Should it change with time? One of the biggest and most difficult questions, what does contact do, has numerous answers, varied opinions, and conflicting research. That question, what does contact do, pervades the book, with a dedicated chapter focused on the purpose, structure, and outcomes of high-quality contact. Even though direct face-to-face contact between a child and the birth parents is currently unusual, ongoing indirect letterbox contact via a third party is often set up. This may be an exchange of letters and photographs once or twice a year. Sometimes it's just one way, the adoptive parents sharing information and photos about the child with specific members of the birth family. It is monitored and safe. However, some birth parents have scanned pictures and placed them on their Facebook pages occasionally with a request to help me find my little princess. One feature worth noting is the viral nature of many of these reconnections. Within days of the first message, text or call, adopted children are linked to siblings, aunts, grandparents, uncles, birth parents and their new partners, often inundated with messages, requests and guilt-laden emotional outpourings. Anecdotal evidence is that teenagers tell their adoptive parents months after the metaphorical horse has bolted and the stable door is swinging sadly. However, by then, there's lots of manure around. Things will never be the same again. Social networking and technological advances will fundamentally change the shape of adoption and particularly contact. Because the issues raised are unique to this decade and only surfaced in 2009, radical rethinking is required. Knowing that with just one click, unsupervised direct contact between adopted teenagers and their birth family could happen via Facebook, the adoption world must review its current and future practices to preempt the issue and implement damage limitation strategies. Technology is galloping ahead. Imagine combining face recognition software with a program that predicts how a toddler will look at 17, throwing geographic location data, and after a few hours on the web, an individual is found. The choice then is whether to connect honestly, stalk, monitor, ignore, or link using an alias. Facebook was only launched in 2004, yet in 2012 has a membership equivalent to the fourth largest country in the world. Most people, especially teenagers and young people, obtain their information via the internet. The world has shrunk. Hyperlinks, clever algorithms, instant connection, and digital technology transform our behaviour. Adoption practices must adapt to accommodate the constant technological advances and the changing needs of adoptive families by tackling root causes, not symptoms. Adoption is being transformed by social networking, and it's unstoppable. Will the changes be healthy and positive, or hurtful and destructive for those affected? This book seeks to address that dilemma and answer the why, what, how, and what if questions. There are useful theoretical models offering new perspectives, plus fresh insights, solutions, and practical ideas for parents and professionals. Threat or opportunity? If all those involved in adoption face up to the reality and ramifications of contact via social networking, we can harness the learnings and transform the impact of Facebook on adoption from a threat into an opportunity. However, without radical change in adoption support and a massive increase in the availability of decent therapeutic interventions, social networking could destroy thousands of existing adoptive placements while current and future prospective adopters are being set up to fail. Yes, it really is that dramatic. Yes, it really is a crisis. And yes, in conjunction with other proposed changes in the adoption world, it is a fantastic opportunity to transform adoption and heal maltreated children, but only if we have the courage to face up to what is beneath the bubble wrap.